Full of Sound and Fury is a podcast for adults by adults containing adult language. Listener discretion is advised. I don't think so, my man. I think it's just us two.
Okay.
But I jotted a bunch of shit I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. How long was it since our last episode?
This is our first episode of 2018.
Holy crap. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember why. January is always a slow month.
Yeah.
Because everyone is just catching their breath from the holidays.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of content is on hiatus too.
True.
So that's always slow. But then February just kind of got fucked up, I guess. I was on an island for 10 days. Well, so well, actually, 7 days and then 3 days back, just doing nothing. So, we'll open it up. Since we're alluding to, welcome back to Full of Sound and Fury. The first episode for 2018. I'm Cyrus Mardazavi, currently snowed in or grappled in, as I've come to understand this particular precipitation is called.
Huh.
Yeah, basically, it's really tiny hail up here in Kirkland, Washington, which is very far from Hawaii, both geographically and in terms of climate. With me, hopefully, not freezing his balls off from Austin, Texas, is Ariel Rodriguez.
Hello. Thank you. Yeah, it's actually not too bad over here. It's a little rainy, a little bit cooler than our usual balmy 103, but
it's about brisk, half that. And a brisk 87.
Yeah. That's considered breezy nowadays.
Well, speaking of Texas, I did not attend PAX South in January. You did.
I did. I was there for one day. It was just kind of a passing through type situation. It was, you know, since it's so close to Austin and San Antonio down there, that my wife and I figured we'd give it a shot. It's my wife's first PAX ever. So, you know, it's a smaller show, but it's better. It's easier to get around and kind of see some stuff. So, for sure, tabletop games in general, I think were more of the prominent feature of PAX South compared to East or West, where you have a broader mix, but a little bit more video game focus outside of the big D&D Acquisitions Inc. stuff. There's a lot of video game stuff to do. I think there's a balance there in East and West that South is definitely tipped a little bit more towards tabletop stuff. Mm-hmm. Although there were plenty of video games, but it feels more tabletop focused.
Are they getting more video games over time? I've not been in a couple of years. My last was 2016, but it was kind of barren, especially for what I would think of as PAX. But my understanding is that that's an industry dead zone time, that time of year. Yeah. So,
yeah, there's not a lot, you know, that's kind of coming out or hasn't been announced and is pretty far away in the January timeframe. Although that's changing a little bit, but as people realize, everybody can't have a video game launch right before Thanksgiving, and you can't have one video game launch in the summer. You have to kind of spread it out a little bit more. But regardless, I think it's better than the first PAX South that I went to.
Okay.
And there's some bigger titles, like Monster Hunter World is a big title that came out recently. It's a January release, so there's definitely has a lot of breathing room as far as getting an audience. And that was featured quite prominently there.
Okay.
And stuff like that. But I just think there's a lot of indie stuff there too. They definitely have the indie booths and what have you, but I still felt like a more of a tabletop role-playing vibe there than a video game vibe.
I really love the venue.
Yeah, it's quite nice.
It's a nice pick.
And you can stay at one of the 15 Marriotts that are within three blocks of
this. The official Full of Sun and Fury podcast unsponsored Marriott Hotels. Yeah. They're great rates, not great for trying to find people.
Yeah, that's true. I'm at the Marriott. Which one? The one next to the river. That's not helping.
The one next to the other Marriott. Oh, fuck. And Fiend. You pitch your phone in frustration and into the river. And thus endeth PAX South. Did you go to Acquisitions Incorporated Life?
that there was no way that one, we were going to make the line in time.
Oh, okay.
And two, like that we were going to wait, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours just to, you know, get a spot. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was, you know, quite popular.
Well, you know, it is at East End Prime for sure, but West now. Wow. Okay. That's cool. I mean, I'm certainly a huge fan. I love those things, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's as popular as ever, I suppose.
Yeah. I was just curious how it's doing. I do feel like they're approaching a saturation point with those shows.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that they're going to expand any further. I think they're probably going to milk it from here on out, is my guess.
Yeah, no, to be for sure, I thought we were there 2 years ago, and then this Philly show showed up.
Oh, yeah, the PAX Unplugged, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe that's just kind of now that the audience is kind of for tabletop, for role-playing stuff is kind of, I don't know, not mature is not the right word, but it's like kind of, it has its own gravity. It has its own, yeah, it's expanding quite a bit. It has its own gravity. It's a slightly different audience than the video game stuff. So maybe it does deserve a slightly different type of show where they find a better way to bifurcate the existing shows. But yeah, I you're right though. I have a hard time believing we're going to grab two more cities than we already have.
Oh yeah.
In a couple of years or something like that.
Yeah. The calendar is filling up too. I mean, like my understanding is getting to South this year was a minor nightmare, depending on if you weren't like doing the 90 minute drive like you were.
Oh yeah. I didn't hear about that, but I'm not surprised, I guess.
Oh yeah. Jerry Holkins had a hell of time. I think Chris Strub had a hell of a time getting there. And, Jerry had a time getting in and out.
Huh.
Apparently there was snow, which, you know, Texans are not the best with.
Yeah, it was pretty cold that weekend.
Yeah. And usually it's not. I mean, it's chilly. It is still January, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's also Texas. But.
Yeah, and San Antonio is relatively far south.
Yeah.
As far as Texas goes.
No. Now, I'm a fan. It just seemed like, for a reason, most of our crew wasn't interested in going, so I was like, well, I'm not going to fly in for that. But, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Like you said, well, right.
Around the corner.
Yeah. But, Marriott's aside, there's the venue's wonderful. There's tons of good food.
Absolutely.
It's more chill, but yeah. But you do have to bring your own fun. Like if you're not there, if you don't have friends, it's not one of those ones where you can just go to and just try out a bunch of video games.
Yeah. For sure. The vibe is less oriented around that. I mean, there's a lot of indie stuff to see, I guess, but if you go to the other shows, it's maybe less impressive, and yeah, it's just a slightly different vibe.
Yeah, but it does seem like it's getting busier.
Yeah, I think slightly. I think they, okay. Or maybe they, what they wisely did is like shrink the expo hall to like a size where it feels full, but it's not taking advantage of the full space. Cause it felt like, you know, you can get to one end of the expo hall and then there's like a ton more room that they've just kind of gated off or let people kind of go in and out of the exit on that side pretty freely. But there's a ton of extra room, but they've, rather than spread everything out too thin in a large space, they've kind of constricted things properly so that everybody kind of bounces off each other in the right way to kind of get the crowd, you know, interacting, if you will.
Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center is a monster.
Yeah, I mean, they could hold probably 1.5 PAXs pretty easily as far as people.
Yeah. Yeah, if it ever, for whatever reason, does expand, like maybe they move it on the calendar year to where they can attract the video games, one of the pimp stuff, they would be well equipped to service that larger crowd. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole area is just all designed about terrorism. And the Spurs. Not necessarily in that order. Although I think their run is finally coming to an end.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for indulging me. I was just curious because I was like,
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I I'm always interested in how the house that Koo built is doing.
Yeah, especially, how many years has it been since he left?
Feels like 18. I think it's been two.
Okay.
I don't think it's even been two full years.
Do you know what he's doing now? I have no idea.
No.
Okay. Maybe he's just basking in whatever cut he had, he got out of it.
He had vague plans to move to Tokyo.
Huh.
I heard from Hawkins. I don't know if that's true or not. Or if he ever did that. Interesting. But... yeah. All right. Well, that's out of the way. I think this is going to be the reason. There's a bunch of stuff I want to talk about, but we're here to review Black Panther. I don't think that's any going to be a surprise to anybody. What do you think?
I tweeted about this. I thought the movie was phenomenal. When the credits rolled, you know, I don't really. It's kind of. I feel like it's cliche to say something is a triumph, but it felt triumphant at the end for the variety of messages that it put out there and how effectively it communicated those and kind of set things up for this hero in a way that we don't really see in other films from Marvel, or really other superhero films in general. So I just thought it was great top to bottom.
I think it's a little bit overrated and we'll get into that in a second, but it is excellent and it's remarkably well constructed. I mean, Ryan Coogler was pulling off some really impressive stuff with his and sometimes very subtly so with his directorial. My quick one-liner review would be Wonder Woman, but with an antagonist. Because structurally, they're very similar.
I suppose so.
Yeah. I mean, they open the exact same way. We have a parent tell a child a story of this mythology behind this fake land that doesn't exist.
Sure.
I mean, it's literally the same opening.
I suppose that's fair. Yeah.
Which is not bad. I think it worked in both cases. It's just
Didn't Black Panther start with the scene in Oakland, or am I thinking otherwise?
I thought it started with Oakland. It dovetails right into that, but it's Baba, tell me the story of the Black Panther.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm wondering if we were thought to believe that was T'Challa and now it's Eric.
I don't know. It could be. Although
that's fascinating.
Yeah. Although, I mean, maybe they intended it to be like a tag to Civil War where he calls T'Challa calls T'Chaka Baba, and that's the only real character you ever hear say that before. Right. So maybe that's like used as a bridge as far as just familiar terms, but could be. Yeah. Could be the other way around.
That's clever if it is. Now I'm going to be wondering about that all night. Yeah, but so we're recording on the evening of February 25th. It has made $700 million in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, goddamn. Yeah. Eric Killmonger is fantastic. I think the strength of the story such that it is that they found a way to encapsulate the entire African experience. Not just the mess that Africa currently is in many places, but, what it means to be African American here in the States in the 21st century.
Well, I think it plays with really interesting ideas about if there were a country, a land like Wakanda that had never been colonized, and what, you know, it asks the question of the characters ask themselves this question, but it also kind of asks the audience to think about and kind of plays the tape a little bit forward in the movie of what responsibility does a place like that have to the rest of the, you know, African-based world, the African diaspora in the United States and beyond. And, you know, that it's a weight that T'Challa as the leader of Wakanda, I think, feels beyond being the king of his country and the normal Game of Thrones type stuff you have there. There's that weight. And then you have the weight that Eric Killmonger brings. It's the weight of the outside world, you know, in a way that's kind of a theme throughout the whole movie, right? It's pretty cool.
Oh, it's the question that drives the whole thing. And
yeah,
he grapples with it and it, you know, rightfully so. It's a huge question.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as evil in certain ways Killmonger is in his methods, I thought it was you know, it's hard sometimes to see the clear line of what the hero takes away from the villain. It's kind of what the villain teaches the hero, or what the villain kind of prompts the hero to think about, other than, you know, the usual, am I good enough, blah, 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 am I worthy, yada, yada, yada. I think Killmonger really did make T'Challa think about, you know, what that sense of responsibility is, and that kind of drives his, you know, his ultimate actions as the leader of Wakanda toward at the end of the movie.
Yeah, the question is not the righteousness of the cause, it's the methodology he employs.
Exactly.
And when he takes the throne.
But tradition is requiring stepping away from that broader cause, in a sense, at the beginning. Right. And it takes Killmonger shaking things up to kind of prompt a different reaction from T'Challa. It makes him decide to go in a particular direction. I mean, he could have just gone full, protectionist and just locked everything down at the end, but he decided not to.
Well, because deep down, it feels like he always feels like that's the right thing to do. But everything in his nation's history is telling him it's wrong.
Yeah, including his own ancestors that visit him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the point where, you know, it changes, and when we get into the third act, where he's like, no, you are wrong.
Yeah,
this is what we've been doing is incorrect.
Yeah, and it shows too, like, maybe it's a little bit too broad of me to say, but it's kind of like, you know, T'Chaka made a difficult decision to leave Eric behind, and T'Challa disagrees with it, and it's hard for him to sometimes just to reconcile that, because he just lost his dad, and to then be angry at his dad is kind of an interesting twist. Cause apparently this movie takes place like a week after Civil War or something like that. So it's lest we forget there was a cataclysmic battle between
it's Rogue One all over again, 7 minutes later.
and then to like realize the decision your dad made, and then kind of going back to you have to be careful with the decisions you make, because they have consequences, and pretty serious ones, and they can create these skeletons that come, you know, visit you back in the form of Killmonger in this in one way, but in another way, you know, choosing to help Ross kind of also helped too. So, you know, it plays with those themes. I think is pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very stylish.
Yeah, that Afrofuturism, man. We need more of that, I think.
Well, that speaks to one of the real strengths of it. I wanted to know more about this world that they were showing us when it was done, because they hinted at so much neat stuff. I was like, yeah, okay, that's when you've done a good job.
Yeah, yeah. It's as if it's its own little world on purpose, of course, at least plot wise. But they really did a good job making it feel unique and interesting.
Yeah, and I, you know, Afrofuturism, yeah, I'm fine with that, but just going broader, giving them even more credit, I would argue, is like any version of world building that good is to be lauded.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if hopefully Aquaman, if indeed it comes out ever, is half as interesting.
Supposedly December?
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Have you yet to see a trailer?
This is going to be an interesting year for all things DC, it's looking like.
Yeah.
So the one thing, well, there's two things I would nitpick on, and these are nitpicks. I don't know that I would give it, you know, the 5-star that everyone was heaping on, you know, hashtag Wakanda forever. One is, once again, this formulaic 3-act structure we're seeing in the Marvel Cinematic Universe films. And I think, what are we, 20 movies into this thing now?
I don't know. I think you might be right.
It's getting
close. Really, it's getting there. It's
getting really tired. In retrospect, I'm realizing one of the things I really enjoyed about last year's Spider-Man Homecoming was that it adheres to that structure, but it played with it enough and had enough going on that it didn't feel like it. And I think that's one of the reasons I really enjoyed that movie. Black Panther really feels like it jumps right into that straitjacket, unfortunately.
Yeah, I can see that.
He executes on it to his credit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of neat stuff going on, but I knew the CGI fuckfest with people fighting CGI rhinos and all kinds of other crazy shit was coming.
Yeah, and at least there was still a real person riding the rhino, if you will. Like,
yeah.
They tried they tried to like have a little bit more of a human element to that last battle. There wasn't a fully CG. I mean, I guess at the end of the, maybe, or maybe it's the other way around. Both Black Panther and Black Leopard, or whatever, were, they felt more human. They were more real. They were also people kind of interspersed with the CGI, but I guess fundamentally the cost, Black Panther's costume and Black Leopard, Killmonger, whatever you want to call them's costume, were fully CGI at the end. So,
oh yeah, those weren't them. I mean,
they weren't them.
I'm not entirely clear what exactly he did to beat him either.
Well, I guess the Sonic stuff kind of disrupted their suits and what have you, and then he just outfought him, I guess, with the spear in the chest at the end.
You're right. He had plot armor, but
But at least they were like fighting with their fists and not like throwing trains at each other and giant, you know, energy whips or what have you. There's a little bit more of a thing.
Yeah.
Than some of the other CGI fests we have, but I do agree it's CGI. And I think one criticism I would have is the CGI definitely looked rushed at spots.
Yes. It's almost like Disney has like 12 of these things in the can at any given moment. And the world literally cannot crank out CGI fast enough.
No, I think you're right. I read an article about this yesterday, I think, or today, I forget when, but not only that, but the directors will change. Like they'll CGI something, and the director will be like, "Ah, well, I want this angle instead." And they have to redo all those shots, and they still have to meet the release day. And there's just not enough people in the world doing those VFX, and so it creates this like, you know, this rush to like get it out. And then sometimes they fix it for home video, and sometimes they don't. And the people the people aren't really getting paid more to fix it for home video, and there's not enough people doing this work or getting paid well enough to like, you know, take their time and kind of push back on this stuff. I don't know. It's a mess, it seems, in the industry as a whole.
But with, again, $700 million in 2 weeks is not going to help that crunch.
Yeah, I know. People accept it anyway. And like, you know, I think us geeks, you know, get more, you know, nitpicky about that stuff than other folks. And that's fine, I guess. But, you know, there were a couple spots where like the mask comes on and off and I'm like,
well, to me, it's just like,
it looks like TV level, like, you know, CW.
I go back to The Force Awakens with this stuff in 2015. That fight scene at the end is better because it's people.
Yeah.
You can't tell me a good stunt choreographer is more expensive than crapping this stuff out in a warehouse in, you know, Vancouver on a computer screen somewhere. Just teach those guys how to fight over a weekend.
Well, and they know because look at the Korea gambling fight scene. That was phenomenal in this movie. And
Korea was good in general.
They had, for a while, it was like a single take shot. I don't know if you've seen the video of Ryan Coogler walking people through that whole thing.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's pretty good because he like explains how they shot it when they go from one level to another without cutting. And it's kind of just kind of interesting the kind of games that they played. Have somebody
really impressed with him as a filmmaker coming away from this movie.
Yeah.
Did you notice that when the shot he employs when Killmonger takes the throne, he starts off by inverts it.
Yeah.
And then flips over like, cause the world has turned upside down.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. A little heavy handed, but it's still clever.
Yeah. And he talks about, there's a couple other videos of him talking about his craft for this movie and how he gave each of the main characters like their own color. And he kind of sticks with it because he wants that comic book pop and that association with it. And they made a conscious decision in costuming and to kind of weave that into to the film. And just, you know, little things here and there like that, where you can tell he's really got his head wrapped around how to do this right.
He's got a tremendous eye for detail.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and he's credited as co-writer too. So
yeah. So it's just phenomenal work by Ryan Coogler. And you know, I just trying to think of all the different ways Black Panther could have gone wrong, and how it in every way really it you know, I think, you know, your three act thing makes sense, and that's really like you're with Marvel. That seems to be a rule that they impose. So setting that aside for a second, like.
Yeah.
They could have had all kinds of different representation problems in this film. They could have rushed it. They could have had a crappy plot that didn't really grapple with the issues that I think Black Panther needed to grapple with, and to kind of more broadly appeal to the audience that it's kind of aimed at and really make people think and kind of take it to that next level. And I think, man, they nailed it there.
Yeah, it's very brave, and Marvel Studios doesn't have the best track record with that kind of stuff. This is why Tilda Swinton was the Agent One, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And so maybe they're trying to make China mad. Yeah. So maybe there is a chance that they could write this ship. You know, it took them long enough, but maybe there's a chance they can do it right.
Well, they've got to be pleased with what they're seeing from accounts payable right now. So hopefully, hopefully they're learning the correct lesson. But yeah, you never know. Sometimes they'll get information to like and just go the completely wrong direction. It's like, is that what you got out of that?
Yeah.
I'm struggling to come up with a good example off the top of my head as we're conversing, but I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think for sure, like, there are things that they've ignored for a long time, like a Black Widow movie that, you know.
We're still getting one next month.
Yeah, I guess so. Come by hook or by crook. It's just.
What else can I say? Guys, you sat on this for a decade. Like, someone was going to like, hey, you know what?
Let's just do this.
We're going to take the second most bankable actress in Hollywood and do the same movie.
And it's hard. I had so much fun watching Black Panther, and I really wanted to revisit Wakanda, and I'm like, man, are we gonna have to wait 2 or 3 years for Black Panther 2? And I'm like, holy shit, Infinity War is 3 months away.
It appears to be ground zero from what I can tell in the trailer. So I don't know, you were gonna wait about 3 months.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, holy smokes.
Yeah,
the trailer is full of Wakanda stuff. I mean, Captain America's there, Bucky's there.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
On Bucky.
Yeah. Well, I assume he just gets a vibranium arm and, you know, we're good.
And no, it's like Oprah. Everyone gets everyone gets vibranium in Wakanda. It's probably in their soda. Although I hope not.
It would be cool to have Oprah be the next Zuri, you know, like the Forest Whitaker's character.
Were you, and this is completely random. Well, not completely, because it's tangentially related, but am I crazy or was Andy Serkis super buff for this movie?
Oh, he was.
What the hell?
And I think he was in Age of Ultron as well, just people didn't really like get a good angle to see it, but yeah. Super buff, that's for sure.
Oh, so you think for that? Okay, yeah.
He's got that mercenary, you know, kind of.
Well, that's right, he's been clawed before. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
And I'm kind of glad that, like, you know, he was kind of a minor character. I mean, they could have played up Claw forever, and it's like, this is kind of Killmonger's just a way better idea.
I thought they were both good, though, to be fair.
Yeah, they work well together.
I enjoyed them really well.
It's just nice not to have to this, like, I am Wakanda's oldest enemy or something. It just feels a little bit too played out, like you'd see it in a Sony Marvel film, not a Marvel Studios film.
Man. But I really enjoyed it. It wasn't without its flaws, but it's really well made.
Absolutely. And I think with the bank that it's made, we're for sure going to see a sequel, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, very shortly there's going to be an episode of this very podcast where we delve into what's on the horizon here.
What Phase 4 will look like, because no one knows.
No, we know 2 movies, right?
Spider-Man Homecoming 2.
And they got to change that title.
Yeah, I assume, you know.
And then the Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
Yeah, which the timeline of that is, I just feel like it's going to end up being post or like pre-Infinity War somehow. I just have a hard time believing that Thanos like comes and fucks some shit up and they're just like, hey, let's have a caper on the side. Just seems like it would be strange.
If what's being posited is going to happen, this may be one of the grandest spectacles ever committed to cinema.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know.
I trust that they know what they're doing as far as balancing things so that it doesn't seem too stupid as far as how things are arranged, because they've been really good about it for 10 years. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. They have very few misses. But, yeah. But, now, am I being cruel, or was T'Challa like one of the saddest people in this movie?
Well, I think he deserved to be, because his dad just died.
Yeah. Well, not sad in that regard, but he was the least capable, and that seemed weird to me.
I guess.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's fair ever, because maybe everybody just really had their shit together in this cast of characters.
I think they really did. Yeah. And I think maybe they did it partially on purpose to let the other characters shine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we'll have to see how things go outside of this film, you know, and sequels and what have you. I mean, Black Panther he's supposed to be like outsmarting everyone. So I'm curious if they're going to play that up.
Yeah. And I think that's what I was reacting to, is he has been portrayed that way previously. And it looks like here in the near future. So when he seemed like he didn't quite have his shit together and was not incompetent, but unsure of himself for sure, it just it played really poorly against everyone else who was a righteous badass. But again, he's growing into being a king. So on some level, that's the story.
Yeah, maybe that's what their intention was. Hard to say, but it'll be curious to see what they do from here on out.
Oh yeah, but I mean, there's going to be a next one for sure.
Yeah,
they'd be crazy not to.
And how are they going to characterize him in Infinity War? Even people, the Black Order invading his country and all that stuff. It should be interesting. Well, see how everyone interacts. Really, I mean.
So what stones are not in play here at this point?
No soul stone.
No soul stone. Okay.
That's it. I think every single other stone is accounted for in some place or another. So there was a lot of suspicion that the soul stone would be the basis for the place where all the Black Panther spirits, you know, interact with each other. I'm kind of glad they didn't do that, because I feel like you take something away from Black Panther mythology on its own by forcing a soul stone in there for that. So I'm glad they just let that all, the vibranium, explain away all that stuff. And heart-shaped herb and all that. And then I don't know where the soul stone will end up, but yeah, that one. I mean, I'm reading over the Infinity Gauntlet again, and you know, Adam Warlock has a lot to do with the soul stone. So are they going to wait for the second, like Avengers 4 to really put that into play? Or is there going to be Adam Warlock stuff in this movie? Or are they not going to play it at all? I mean, they teased him in Guardians 2.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Hats off to them for keeping this shit under wraps up to this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think even the people that voiced the Black Order, like Thanos' children, the voice actors are kind of under wraps. I don't think they've announced all of those.
they're in a closet somewhere.
Yeah, well, according to, I think someone, Kevin Feige or someone, was saying that they are well-known voice actors. So, you know. Seems like a lot of this is for sure, you know, being held pretty close to the vest, which is fascinating in a way.
Yeah, no, it's tough to do. But Disney's certainly getting good at it, and they have a long history of vaults, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe they're the best equipped to deal with it.
There's like an Infinity Gauntlet and a bunch of voice actors shoved in with the last copy of Cinderella or some shit.
Right. Or, you know, the first, you know, or the Song of the South. the one they're more like, no, we can't take that one back out. It has to stay in there. Too racist. We know better now.
For some reason, we can't just burn it, but we have to keep it. But we have it in a vault, really deep vault.
All right, I have a question for you.
Okay.
And I'm really bummed that Key couldn't make this one, because I think he would have fun with it. So Marvel Studios, and we have Marvel's Netflix product.
Yeah.
If Disney came to you and threatened to throw you in the vault, if you didn't answer this question, next to Song of the South, and said, okay, so take one of our movies and make it a series. Take one of our series and make it a movie. Which ones would you pick and why?
Man. Shoot, that's a very good question. It's for series, huh? I feel like Ant-Man could be a good series because it's more character driven. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you can have more heist like stories that maybe get a little bit more involved with the staging and the planning, and kind of they kind of threw a lot of characters out that you could kind of explore compared to some other movies where you, I mean, you got like, you know, Captain America and Bucky and maybe a Nick Fury and a Scarlet, which is, I've been Scarlet Johansson, but I meant Black Widow, in like Winter Soldier, but you had like Michael Peña's character, T.I.'s character, you had the family character, you had Scott Lang, you had Hank Pym, you had Hope, you had a lot of characters, so you could kind of build that out into a more full cast and do a TV show. So that's one idea anyway.
Yeah.
As far as the shows that could be a movie, it's kind of ironic because the whole Inhumans thing was a disaster and it was supposed to be a movie and got turned into a show, by the way. Mm-hmm. But no, I would not suggest that. Oh, man. I mean, most of them, not Iron Fist and Jessica Jones, I guess.
See, I feel strongly that Iron Fist is the correct answer.
Yeah, I think it needs the budget.
Because the choreography and the budget could really make that thing shine.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. That's probably what I would do.
I mean, could you imagine like getting like, you know, one of those truly badass Eastern choreographers in on that thing?
Yeah, I mean, and someone who could actually fight.
Well, yeah. Yes.
I actually have enough of a budget to have a real dragon. Not or the bones of one.
Quinlan.
Or Quinlan in general.
Or do shoot like the whole, on location in China.
Yeah. Do the whole Seven Capitals Cities of Heaven storyline and have the actual tournament film. Like do a Mortal Kombat type film, but with Iron Fist lore. But,
you know, good.
Yeah.
I think Iron Fist works really well. For me, I would serialize Spider-Man. You can't obviously do that because it's too damn expensive, but
it would be awesome.
It's just, it's just got such a rich cast of characters and so much stuff they can dig into there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, the Flash does a reasonably good job of working around that shit.
Yeah. I think if nothing else, the CW has shown that you can take, you know, superhero stuff and make it a weekly series. It's doable.
Yeah.
And successful.
Hell yeah.
And Legends of Tomorrow as well, for that matter. I mean, I know I'm probably the only person that watches it in this the podcast group, but they do have people that shrink in size every week and shoot fire and ice and you know, they have a lot of other powers, just wind powers now, and they have Vixen and all that stuff. So it's totally doable.
Well, I don't know that you need to be self-deprecating there, even if in jest. This is the golden age of content. There's a lot of stuff that's awesome out there that I don't get to see. So stuff that's, you know, only good. I can't. It's like, where do I fit that in anymore? It's just like, nah.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I meant to ask you this totally off topic, but have you seen the show The Magicians?
I am so glad you brought it up because I wanted to talk about it.
Okay, cool.
I just finished season 2.
Oh, so did we. My wife and I just finished watching it
a couple weeks ago. Oh, serendipitous. Okay, so we can dig into this. All right, people. I realize season 3's on. We haven't seen it, so we won't spoil it if you're ahead of us. If you're on the Netflix stuff that's out, we're about to spoil the shit out of this, I think. How do you feel about it?
That show, every time I think I understand where it's going to go, it flips the freaking script.
It punches me in the dick.
It's like this weird, twisted, like dark Harry Potter, more irreverent. I don't even know how to like describe it. It's like Joss Whedon and Harry Potter
stuff.
Because
it's a rich casserole that has everything in it tonally. It's amazing. True. It is. I mean, yeah. The elevator pitch is Harry Potter, the college years, right? But it's so much more.
Yeah,
it's super dark, and then it turns around 5 minutes later with a Taylor Swift joke, and it's like, what is? Am I watching the same show? I mean, I know I did because I didn't change the channel or, you know, hit pause on Netflix. But oh my god,
the part where the dragon's like fucking millennials. I'm like, really?
Yeah, it's the one critique I will offer is that, because I almost bailed on it after the first three episodes, is it does not have an insertion character.
That's true. It takes a while to kind of understand the mechanics of everything because you're just right in the middle of it all.
Everyone is so fucking broken.
Yeah, it's true.
There's no Kitty Pryde / Jubilation Lee to cling to.
That's true.
Does that make sense? I think Clinton's supposed to be that guy, but he's on Prozac.
Yeah, and I mean, they show you how broken it is before he even discovers break pills.
Yeah, and it takes a while for it to like, yeah. So I found it to be a little bit of a slog there for those first three, but yeah, now I can't remember what it was that really kind of piqued my interest in it. I think it was the revelation about Eliza.
Ah, okay.
Or maybe not the fact when they outed her, but when they started seeing that there were the chat ones might, their story wasn't actually fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Right around episode 4. Yeah. I also don't understand why Penny can't wear a shirt.
That's just his vibe, man.
Yeah. I was like, they're buttons. Like, how hard is this?
Well, and he can, I don't know, he can teleport wherever he wants. I feel like it matches his free going lifestyle. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a very unique show. I think you'd be hard pressed to find something like that elsewhere on TV.
Yeah,
anywhere, and the actors are really comfortable, especially in season two, with their characters and kind of where things are going. And I was worried in season two that the fantasy setting was going to kind of just be all fantasy all the time now, but they wove that in just so well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's excellent. I honestly would have been okay with Harry Potter with fucking and swearing. I think that alone would, sign me up. But now it was like, wow, there's like unexpected depth and shit here. Okay.
Yeah, and the whole hedge witch thing and just there's a lot to it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's a really good point. God, I don't know how they cram that much story into 50 minutes or 45 minutes, really.
Yeah, I don't know.
So much shit. I mean, part of it is they just kind of like they trust the audience to follow them, and sometimes stuff is not clear.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm someone who's super into fantasy stuff, and I'm like, wait, what the hell just happened? Sometimes, but I'm glad they're doing it that way. I like when the storytellers trust me, or where in this scenario, me as the audience, trust us to have our shit together.
Yeah.
And then we'll get there.
You know, I don't know if you watch The Expanse. I've only seen season one. I have season two on my docket to watch, but I think The Expanse asks the same. And I think it's maybe the way the Sci-Fi Channel has decided to play this as far as adaptations go, where they're like, well, our audience is a little bit different than the audience on NBC or the CW or Fox. And maybe we can do this, ask this of them.
Yeah. No, I think people are generally more intelligent than they're given credit for. And when you dumb your art down, you're not doing anyone any favors.
Sure, sure.
Unless you really just want the 60-year-old boomer crowd.
They got Fox News. What else do they need?
and Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show. They're good.
Boom.
Yeah. The rest of us like to be challenged. Yeah, no, it's I'm really enjoying it. And yeah, I was particularly impressed with Olivia Taylor-Dunham in that second season.
Right on.
They asked that actress to be six characters.
Yeah.
Over the course of 13 episodes. She did pretty well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My understanding is it's actually not that similar to the source material, Les Grossman's Brooks.
That's my understanding as well, yeah.
Yeah, and that's fine with me. I suppose there's someone out there that's upset that there is deviation, but
yeah, and I don't know how many. I don't know what the fan base is like. Were they really trying to, please the fan base with an adaptation, or were they just kind of trying to see where this went as far as the concept being more of the attraction to the broader audience, and then they kind of just went from there. I mean, it's only three books, I think, so I hope there's more than three seasons.
If it's as popular as it seems to be, because it seems like a lot of people I know are watching this show and enjoying the hell out of it. I think that would suggest to me it's doing quite well. So I think it might be fillery forever here. Sci-fi might have something they haven't had since Battlestar.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
I know they're trying to spec on the DC thing for a minute. They're trying to do this Krypton show. I don't know if you've heard much about that.
Just a little bit, but I'm starting to see the ads now.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not so excited. It reminds me of Caprica, where they're like, hey, oh, this other show you liked. let's go back in time and kind of explore this other world for a little bit. Like,
I read the premise and some of the characters. It sounds intriguing, but it's all going to be an execution.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Dave Goyer's track record with Superman is spotty at best.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Sometimes when you love something enough, you should just let it go.
I thought you were like, sometimes when you love something enough, you should just strangle it in the crib. Like, that's kind of what they've done.
That's not the letting go that I was referring to.
Shh, go to sleep. Oh. Well, it's a Murderverse. Or at least it was.
Yeah. I mean, have you managed to catch Justice League since it came out?
I haven't yet.
They lighten it up.
That's what I've heard. Is it Redbox Fable now?
It should be.
Okay, I will make sure to watch it before our next episode.
Maybe it comes out in a couple weeks on disc, and it's already out on digital. I think that's what the case
okay.
is.
Okay, that sounds about right, because I think Ragnarok's about to hit.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right, but soon.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. I think more of my question for you will be, given the material that they had to start with, like, what do you think of the tone shift that they tried to make? You know, like, how effective do you think it was? Again, working from where they're working from, not having the ability to just start over from scratch.
Did they make chicken salad from chicken shit, you mean?
Sure, if that's the way it was.
I'm curious myself. Key thought it was definitely better than he thought it was, although he, whatever they taped onto Henry Cavill's face digitally did.
Oh, yeah, that first, it, and the saddest part is, I think the worst of it is at the very beginning of the movie. So you get it full, like literally, like there's no one in the shot except him with the CGI mustache. And you're just like, oh boy.
Great.
Yeah.
Speaking of the stash.
Yeah.
Am I crazy, or does that Fallout trailer look amazing?
It does.
It looks really good.
They keep doing it, man.
Is this the sixth one? Do I have that right?
Yes, sixth one.
I need to go watch 4 and 5.
Yeah, both of those are fun.
Is Tom Cruise going to go Harrison Ford with this? Doing it until I die?
He may. And he may die during one, depending on these stunts.
Because he looks good for his age, but he's up there. I know this.
Yeah, and he's starting to look. I mean, I guess I did everyone a favor and watched The Mummy. And except myself. I didn't do myself.
Oh, you're doing the Lord's work, man.
Oh, I was on a plane. It was
captive audience.
Yeah. And he's starting to look a little bit, you know, different. Not as cut as he was before.
Should he have played The Mummy?
Well,
a little desiccated there, is he?
The plot, you don't know how close to the plot you are.
Okay. Wait, hell, there's a plot?
Well, the tatters, you know, again, okay. The mummy-like tatters. Of
plot-like substance included.
Yeah. But it looks really fun, and Cavill looks good in it too. I'm glad they're bringing back again more of the memorable characters. I think they found three that they're like, okay, this is the collection we needed.
Yeah,
let's roll with these.
Yep,
and okay. Add one new element every movie.
Right, just rotate them in, but they have like a core. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, and they definitely Forrest Whitaker and what's his name? Simon Pegg.
Yeah, I mean Ving Rhames. Yeah, Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg for sure. Yeah.
Oh, it's right. It's Ving. My bad. It feels like Forrest Whitaker is everything I watch anymore.
He's great too.
Yes, he is. It's true. He's ubiquitous though.
Yeah, those two guys, Tom Cruise, and then I think God, what's her name now? Rebecca. Why am I losing my my memory here? The character that they introduced in 5 is back in 6.
Oh, okay. Which one is that one?
Rebecca Ferguson. So that's called Rogue Nation.
Rogue Nation. That's right. Yeah. I could remember the one that had Renner, and Renner was like was being groomed to take over.
Yeah, and then he's not
in the rumor. But then, like Tom Brady, Cruz was like, "No, I'm actually just going to play this until I'm 70." Goodbye, Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
Don't let your arrows and bow hit you on the ass on the way out.
It's a bummer because I feel like he was been poised to take over two different franchises with the Bourne stuff as well. And like he's.
Yeah. He's and then both those guys came back. Nah, nah, sorry.
It's a shame.
Give me my ball back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, someone should just create something for him.
They should just do a Hawkeye movie and do the Matt Fraction Hawkeye.
Or even better, someone else should make it and call it like Red Eye and then they cast him in it. I would watch that.
Call it like Eagle Eye or something.
Right, there you go, yeah. Eagle Eye, bam. Starring Jeremy Renner. Oh, we missed the obvious to it. Hawk Guy.
Oh, yeah, Hawk Guy. Perfect. Hawk Guy and Pizza Dog. Hawk Guy, done.
There we go. Yeah, you're the Hawk Guy.
Exactly. Done. And they'll always like hint that he's really the same character, but like do the narrow miss.
All right. So is there a plan now that all the two guys from the American Justice League film are not involved with the DCEU anymore?
I don't even know because the Flashpoint movie keeps losing the directors. I think they're back at square one again.
By the way, I don't know if we should this the chutzpah of opening with of your first film as a reboot. God, that's nice. I don't think anyone's gone there before. So kudos there. That's pretty brave.
Yeah, they're like
you didn't even boot. You just started with the reboot. That's incredible. Jesus Christ. The first one is a Flashpoint. What?
Yeah, that was surprising to me, but it made sense given what the history. I think they should just keep making Wonder Woman and just pretend that the other Wonder Woman stuff maybe doesn't exist or doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And just keep milking that because that's a good start to the franchise. But others.
Yeah, and they felt strong enough that Patty's got this, that they're putting her up against Star Wars. So,
yeah, bam. And I bet she'll deliver. But the setup, like the organization of the other films seem, I guess Shazam is another one that's coming down the pipe.
Right. Because speaking of guys who are in every movie I watch now, I think Dwayne Johnson is attached to that. So that's going to happen. Whether it's good or not, I don't know. I don't know, but.
Yeah, and I just don't know if they're, like, are they going to stick with the cinematic universe from now on? Are they going to pretend everything's separate now?
It's like they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It gives a strong sense that they're just pulling this crap out of their ass as they go along. They desperately need someone to, like.
Yeah, keep it all. Vision
that's not horrible and full of murder and hate in their hearts.
Yeah,
I will say this. I hope Cavill gets a chance to do a good Superman film.
He's a great Superman. I think Ben Affleck was cast pretty well as Batman as well.
Yeah, he was just fine.
Yeah.
Oh man, but it's okay. So there's I saw something that like a clickhole article that Lena Dunham was attached to this Batgirl thing.
Oh really?
Yeah. Just. Are you excited about that?
I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Like acting or directing or writing?
She would be the director, theoretically.
I don't know. You never know.
That's true. Sometimes they have other gears, but that's a significant departure from what I know her as. And I'll try and put that as kindly as I can. Yeah. All right. So, so that's just utter chaos. Okay. That's kind of what I figured the answer to that was going to be.
Yeah. I don't feel as coherent of a, I feel like Marvel has a more coherent plan, even though we don't even know what it is for phase four, than what 2019 and beyond, as far as DC films look like.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a shame. I think, I feel like there is a lot of potential there, but.
Well, there definitely is. We'll be able to have this conversation and have some actual fun with it come June. We need to see what Infinity War is going to break before we can see where they might start over.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think we do need that that movie to conclude before we speculate.
And could even posit anything. I do think we're going to see Bucky Cap. I feel pretty strongly that's in the cards at some point.
I can see that.
Right now, that's the only thing I really feel comfortable positing, but.
Yeah, I feel like we're in for a good deal of Captain Marvel, and having her influence.
Yeah,
you know, felt quite strongly going forward, and Black Panther as well, and some Spider-Man, because you don't just let your franchise character linger.
Oh yeah, Spidey. We know Spidey is in the docket, like you mentioned.
But beyond that, I mean, they have a stable to deal with an aftermath and build out more of. We'll see, I guess.
I'm super curious to what they do with it, because they've got some older actors in these roles, and they're going to have to contend with that. Rudd's in his mid-40s, right?
I think so, but hey, look, Tom Cruise, we were just talking. It's fine.
So they just all need to become Scientologists. Is that the... that's the solution. Done and done.
Somehow that's the secret.
How old is Cruise? I'm going to look this up, because I swear to God, he's got to be almost 60 if he's not there already.
Let's see.
55 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oof. You got to figure he's going to be doing the whole Roger Moore is still James Bond thing shtick here pretty soon.
Hopefully they fold him into, like, you know, a little bit more of an avuncular role, like a la Liam Neeson, you know. Like, let's be smart about this, folks. We've already lived through this before in multiple iterations on other franchises. You know, there's a way to be involved with it. You got to become a role player. You got to go to the bench. This is how it works.
Would you rather see him stay as Ethan Hawke and take a desk position, or would you rather see them recast Ethan Hawke?
I think Ethan Hunt should stay semi-active.
Ethan Hawke is also incredible at Mission Impossible.
You know, he might be, you know, it'd be good to kind of roll him in somehow.
Mission Impossible Training Day.
I think if you anyway,
it writes itself, it does
in a way. I think if they find a way to make Ethan Hunt's character kind of like M, but more active version of M, like a blend between Nick Fury and M, think they have something there that lets Tom Cruise stop dangling from ropes on helicopters. But still gets him involved doing some, you know, meatier stuff than just sitting behind a desk.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I'd be down with either. But after two pretty they weren't terrible. They just weren't good openings. Abrams really came in and righted the ship, and now they seem like they're really kind of cruising right along.
Yeah, I really do feel like they know now what this franchise is about, and it works pretty well.
Oh yeah, I'm a little surprised it took them so long to kind of figure out how to do it correctly.
I think they just shed. Maybe at least in the first one for sure, they were too beholden to the original source material, and then John Woo mixed it up and did a John Woo film. Right. I think that swung the pendulum too far in the other direction. And then they needed to kind of level it out. And I think JJ, you know, adds the right magic material there. And then from there, he leveled it out. It's centered. It's good.
That now makes three franchises he has
saved. Resurrected.
Yeah.
Where will he go next after episode 9? That's an interesting.
He's the franchise whisperer. Well, we can probably figure it out right now. What's a really good one that's sucking and shouldn't be sucking that he can come and fix?
He should fix the Bionic Man / Woman.
He should fix the DCU.
Well he could do that too. Didn't he have a treatment for Superman once upon a time? I swear there's something involvement with him and Superman somehow.
I think he may have been part of that ill-fated McGee run at it.
But anyway, I think he would do some crazy stuff with the Bionic franchise.
Oh, the $6 Million Man?
Yeah. I think that was the right amount of sci-fi weirdness and slight body horror that he kind of indulge in sometimes and go places. I think he could take it places. And I think he could do he could just call it Bionic. I don't care. It doesn't have to have a singular male or female. It can have both characters, have them. Who knows? You can go in so many different directions. I think it sets up an interesting gimmick that he can play off pretty well.
Well, they would have to change the title. You're right there. I mean, they if nothing else, they have to adjust for inflation.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I was just going for
a health care system. $6 million won't even buy you a regular arm.
$6 Million Man. It's like I got my gallbladder replaced. Roll credits.
That's two Tylenols at the hospital. Wait, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we close it out, how about some good news for DC? We now know what Brian Michael Bendis is doing for them in the publishing line. And I'm getting my wish. I'm getting Lois Lane. I'm getting Superman.
Yeah. And I was really excited to hear him say that they're going to flesh out Metropolis. I don't know why, but for me, that was one of the more exciting things about the whole thing and how they're going to make it as integral to Superman lore as Gotham is for Batman. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't think that was something that was needed, but that sounds like a really cool idea.
It's one of those things. Once someone points it out, you're like, oh yeah, it's we're in year almost 100 of this IP and we haven't really done that yet. How has that happened?
Yeah.
We know more about Kandor than we know about Metropolis. The hell, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they should absolutely do that. Yeah, yeah. I'm pumped. And he's bringing the underwear back.
Yeah, it's true. The underwear returns. They finally figured out whatever legal loophole they needed to figure out to get the underwear back.
This feels like a big deal, though. It does remind me of, I was too young for it. We were both too young for it. But when Byrne jumped ship from Marvel to go to DC and with Man of Steel back in 87.
Oh, right. Yep. Yeah. I've heard parallels to that. I mean, yeah, I was too young to experience that, really. But, I got to tell you, I'm going to buy Superman books for the first time in a long time, other than the classic ones.
Likewise, yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I don't really know when this stuff is dropping, but I think it's soon.
Yeah, well, Action Comics 1000 I think is in a month or two, and then he has a 6-issue miniseries I think starts in the summer.
Yeah, Man of Steel. Yeah.
And then after that, I think he actually is full-blown writing Superman and Action Comics, I think. But I'm not 100% sure on that.
That sounds right.
I think Man of Steel kind of reboots, soft reboots the world so that he can play from there on in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's my understanding as well, but we'll find out.
I got to tell you, speaking of other good DC stuff, back on the CW, Black Lightning, I don't know if you watched Black Lightning at all, but I'm having a lot of fun with that show.
I haven't. I heard it's excellent.
Yeah. Really cool. They skip the whole origin story thing and they just dive right into a more mature hero who's done things, retired, come back. Like, just really cool, really well done. Different vibe, different aesthetic than the other CW shows.
I'm hearing it's the best one in the Arrowverse. Is that correct?
I think it's the freshest and most exciting one because the other ones we kind of know what to expect. Flash being season 4, Arrow season 6, Legends season three or four. I want to say four now. Supergirl season three. It's the freshest and it's the most, I don't know how to say it. Like, it feels a little bit more grown up than the other ones.
It feels a little less
comic booky.
That's cool.
But then at the same time, it's got some of that 90s comic book show sensibility at the same time. Like, you just have to watch it.
Okay. I don't know when I'm going to carve out time.
Yeah. You know, you may have to wait till some of the other good things, yeah, you know, go on hiatus, but don't sleep on it when you get the chance.
Okay. I did catch up on The Magicians, but I took the opportunity to begin The Punisher finally last night.
Oh, man.
And that was every bit as violent as I wanted it to be.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, like, the first episode was, you know, got me thinking this is going to go in the right direction. And it kind of ground down to me, you know, through the rest of the season. I'll be curious to hear what you think about the rest of it.
Oh, and so you feel like it gets worse as it goes along.
Yeah. I feel like it slows down. It delves a lot into PTSD and kind of veterans issues, which are important, but the Punisher himself doing what he does best, I feel like it was pretty light on that as it goes. There's much more conspiracy theory and
okay.
veterans issues stuff. It's almost like it's another like a different kind of show, not a Marvel show.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. On the comic side, it's sort of DC, sort of not. I've been reading Warren Ellis's The Wildstorm. Man, that has me excited for Wildstorm stuff again.
Oh, I can only imagine. Well, like, Warren has that kind of, he's like the J.J. Abrams of comic books.
Yeah, man, he took all those older familiar elements and he's remixing them, and it is exciting. I really had a blast with the first trade.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I don't have much to offer now, but Emerald City Comic Con is just days away.
Oh yeah,
I'm gonna go just live and breathe them for a few days. So I'm sure I will have. When next we meet, I will have plenty of stuff to report on this.
Cool.
I get to meet Bendis. Actually, I'm very excited about that.
Oh, that is awesome.
I am gonna make him sign my copy of Alias Number One.
Fantastic.
And we will have our answer, Ariel. Look forward to that in the next episode.
I think that's more of a you and Key thing.
It's true, but he's not here.
you may want to have them videotape.
Oh, I'm gonna have it. I'm gonna have him autograph that page.
Oh my god,
that's the plan. It's gonna say, dear so and so, Key or Cyrus was right. Brian Michael Bendis. That's the plan.
Holy crap.
Well, we'll see if he actually acquiesces. I think he will. Seems like he's got a pretty good sense of humor.
Wow. All right. Yeah.
I mean, the guy did an issue about monkeys fucking.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty pumped he's there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm very curious how that's going to go.
Yeah. Voltron is going to debut over there too.
Oh, right.
Season five?
Five, yeah.
Crazy already, yeah.
Yeah.
So they got some pretty cool stuff on the docket. And then Image always like just brings like a huge booth of just delicious trades. So
rocking.
Yeah, I'm going to be a lot poorer, but happier in about 5 days.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. All right, man. I think we hit all the stuff we wanted to hit.
Cool. Yeah, your list checked off, complete.
The list is complete. I think this episode is too. Ariel Rodriguez of Austin, Texas. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Of course. I've been Cyrus Morzavi of Kirkland, Washington. You can follow me at greatswordstudios.com and more recently on Vero, the app that everyone's on that no one's actually using. So that's a free plug.
Right on.
I literally don't know what the hell the thing is for, but all of a sudden everyone's on it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to get in on it.
Yeah. Get in early. Get in the ground floor.
Yeah. But ironically, I still don't have a Facebook page.
Maybe that's better off. Maybe you're better off that way.
How much time do I really want to spend arguing with neo-Nazis anyway?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Yeah, you can listen to this episode and previous episodes of Full of Sound and Fury at fullofsoundandfury.com or via subscription to iTunes. This has been a Great Sword Studios production. Copyright 2018.